Initiating sound check. Preparing and initiating pan test. Pan test left. Pan test right. Left. Right. Pan test complete. Sound check now complete. All systems are ready.
I gotta close the window before I record, because New York don't know how to be quiet.
What up, my fellow Knicks fans? This is your guy, Marcellus Ease, and don't panic quite yet. First off, round of applause for yourselves. Championship season is still on the way, even though there are going to be some ups and downs. We're going to take you a little bit off those algorithms and get you into some more nuanced topics. First off, we're going to take a step back and take a look at some of the future outlooks of this Knicks team post-trade deadline. The conference is not only shaken up, but the Knicks are going to have a lot of major off-season decisions to make. And then we'll check out an unlikely duo returning back in Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith as they talk about the current day Knicks and some of their trials and tribulations this season. When we get away from a little bit of the trolling coming from Skip Bayless, there was a little bit of nuanced topics that were brought up in regards to our favorite team. And is LeBron James in his camp very subtly letting it be known that it's a possibility that he could be making his way to New York? The Midwest propaganda machine has been on overdrive ever since Rich Paul has launched his podcast, and now Brian Windhorst is giving some insight into LeBron James' future plans. And speaking of future plans, we're going to rewind and get more insight into what happened last season as Queens native Precious Achiuwa actually opened up into some of Tibbs' roster rotations from last season. Precious let it be known that he had plenty of gas in the tank, and unfortunately, he was not given that opportunity to shine in NYC last season. Then last but not least, we're going to touch base with a New York City legend, just a player that embodies what it means to be a New York Knick, as John Starks did a sit down with Carmelo Anthony, and they hit a lot of different nuances that not only took place in his career, but it intertwines with a lot of the storylines we see play out today. The way the players interact with the media, blocking out a lot of the outside noise, and also the healthy discussion around Patrick Ewing and his legendary status as being one of the greatest Knicks of all time. All right, my fellow Knicks fans, this is just a quick PSA, as I will be doing a lot of hardwood nuances that's going on with the squad exclusively on Patreon or pannick.com. Each video is available for individual purchase, or you could do a monthly subscription where you get everything all at once. This allows the freedom to drop a lot of dope videos in a very unique way, as we'll do a lot of the storytelling as well as the nuances with the squad as things continue to evolve as the season progresses. So we get into the nitty-gritty with the details. This is a great way to exchange value without any of the annoying ads. And thank you for all your support. So the way this year's trade deadline played out was quite interesting. Once you overlook a lot of that Giannis hype, you start to see underneath the surface there's a lot of things that's switching up with the Eastern Conference. And in this segment, we're going to take a look at the outlook of that future. Quite a few teams have tooled up, like the Wizards, the Indiana Pacers low-key, and also the Detroit Pistons. The NBA nowadays has a minimum salary that teams have to spend every season, which is around $140 million. And for the first time, teams that normally be tanking every single season, like the Washington Wizards, now have to actually acquire some talent. For those of you that are watching the visual version of this, I've pulled up right here the key moves that will affect the conference going forward. For starters, the Pacers have made a really interesting move by going out and getting Zubac. I don't know if they're running a Pat Riley sweatshop down there, but they continuously keep finding role players to come off the bench and impact the game. Jairus Walker, Ben Shepherd, even more recently, Quentin Jackson, who kind of went off in the matchup against the Knicks in that overtime game. But when Tyrese does make his comeback, the Knicks, if they do remain small going into next season, they are going to have a lot of sizing issues, not only dealing with Pascal Siakam himself, but also a skilled big man in Zubac. So that'll be one thing to look out for. Another key note here, more recently, I would say the Detroit Pistons have tooled up on their three-point shooting by going out and getting Kevin Huerter. If the Knicks do come across the Pistons in the playoffs, that shit will be looking like WrestleMania. But we'll definitely have our eye on the Pistons all season long, as I believe the real story is their defense. But I still have an APB on that. Sticking to another move that will directly affect this season, of course, is the Cavs going out and getting James Harden. But I'm not too gung-ho on that. First of all, Donovan Mitchell, ever since he defeated Russell Westbrook in the playoffs, back when he was a rookie, he's been a first-round exit consistently. And James Harden in the playoffs doesn't necessarily have the best track record when it comes to certain pressurized situations. Now, another slick move is the Boston Celtics going out and getting Vooch on an expiring contract. Not only they ducked the second apron for the foreseeable future, but now they get to retool while having their key players, guys like Derek White, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum, locked in. So summer 2026, which is supposed to have a lot of free agents, we're going to see what they do have in store. Jumping over to the Charlotte Hornets, their moves wasn't necessarily too crazy, but the one thing I would say is that they added to their sharp shooting with Kobe White, as well as finally adding a veteran presence on that team in Mike Connolly. Who knows, maybe he could bring a level of seriousness to that franchise. And last but not least, the Washington Wizards, who were pretty much in NBA purgatory for years. And now in one season, they acquired two stars in Trae Young and Anthony Davis. I know a lot of us kind of seem skeptical still with Anthony Davis's health, Trae Young not necessarily being a good fit with a lot of players as we've seen it play out in Atlanta. But they did add a lot of three-point shooting to their team in D'Angelo Russell and Dante Exum. All that talent is going to be right next to a bunch of young players that they were already developing, while at the same time this season tanking to get a top pick. Be on the lookout to see what kind of situation his team is in after the offseason. It's not going to be shocking if they're very beefed up, especially with their bench. They got Cam Whitmore, Bub Carrington, Keyshawn George. There's a lot of young talent on that team already, on top of the fact that they're going to mix it in with some of these veteran players. The NBA now is sort of in an NFL model where players are just going to be moving around from season to season, and there's always going to be talent available for teams to get better. That's why I'm always saying with this version of the Knicks, it's now or never. During the offseason, we're going to have to figure out what we're going to do with guys like Deuce McBride, Jose Alvarado, Landry Shamet, as well as Mitchell Robinson. So a lot of decisions have to be made. Mikal Bridges' brand new contract will be kicking in. So a lot of money is outgoing already to Jalen Brunson, OG Anunoby, Mikal, as well as Karl-Anthony Towns. But we'll see. The conference is definitely shaking up. Guys like Jason Tatum, as well as Tyrese Halliburton, will be coming back into the fold. And this shit is feeling like it's going to be the Royal Rumble out there for the 2026-27 season. So Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless reunited and they talked the Knicks. We never thought we would see them two back on the stage together, but they talked about the current day Knicks and some of their trials and tribulations living to the expectations of making the NBA Finals this season. And it was quite interesting, as Skip has always been a skeptic of just anything Knicks. But you guys check it out, and every once in a while, I'll check in.
For years and years and years, you have been ridiculing my Dallas Cowboys, quote-unquote, accident waiting to happen.
Yeah. I don't think I've been wrong.
The irony of it, the hypocrisy of it, is that your beloved New York Knicks are the single biggest accident that ever happened in the history of sports. You have not won a championship since 1973. That's 53 years. You were 6 years old when your Knicks won the last championship.
Five. Right.
Just for the record, since 1973, my Dallas Cowboys have been to six Super Bowls and won four of them, and overall 8-5. And just for the record, since 1973, your New York Knicks have made it to two NBA Finals and lost both. And the second Finals came in the strike-shortened 50-game season in which you snuck in the back door of the NBA Finals, and you lost that one.
Gotcha.
So how can you continue to ridicule my team when your team is way more ridiculable than my team?
False. Skip, your fucking Dallas Cowboys are in a league where every single season you get decent draft picks or you just get opportunities to select good players and y'all still fuck up. The Knicks since Patrick Ewing haven't really had top four, top three picks, what, maybe less than two or three times in over 20 years? So at the end of the day, the rebuilding opportunities have been different and your Cowboys can never live up to expectations. You're always in position, but you can never live up to the expectation. The Knicks, on the other hand, had very few chances to actually live up to any expectations as they weren't really in position to fully go all the way like they are this season.
Easy answer to that question. I'm more sensible than you. let me explain.
How so?
I know the Knicks suck. I always have.
Oh, and I'm delusional.
You're delusional.
Yeah.
You wanted those Cowboy fans. No, we're going to win the Super Bowl next week. We're going to do it. It's like, of course he did. I'm the one on the air going off about how my Knicks sucked for years and years and years. I wasn't under any illusions that they were going to beat Michael Jordan. I'm praying that they prove me wrong, but I can't bet against Michael Jordan. I mean, it would drive me crazy. It would break my heart. But I wasn't delusional. The difference between me and you is that you don't want to say when the Cowboys stink. And then you want to go all ballistic and lose it, all right, and be apoplectic. The second reality sets in when, for me, that reality was always there.
Knicks don't suck right now.
No, they don't.
Feeling pretty good about them?
Yeah. I'm feeling pretty good about them, but I'm a little bit nervous because the Detroit Pistons, I think, are the team to beat in the East.
I think a lot of analysts are a little bit too premature on that. We still have to see the Pistons in very big moments actually execute. Their last series with the Knicks, that's really where they fucked up at. It was even to a point where they could even protect home court. Throughout the NBA history, young players, when they tend to get into the playoffs, certain pressurized moments, because they are brand new, they tend to fold under it.
Cleveland picking up James Harden, even though the brother don't show up in big games, game six, game seven, last four game sevens, he's averaging 13.8 points, shoot 27% for terrible, 17%.
He's a disaster.
Range. In the big games, he just hasn't shown up.
Right.
But they got Donovan Mitchell, who I believe would show up. Mm-hmm. And then you kept your two bigs in Allen and Mobley. And so as I look at the New York Knicks, I'm like, if it was Thibodeau, I wouldn't be as worried. Because they rough and rugged, and they came at you. They were like cardiac kids fighting all the time. Mike Brown is a really good man. He really, really is, and he's a good coach. But I'm waiting to see, can he pull that extra oomph out of you?
Now, that signing of Jose Alvarado and Jeremy Sochan is definitely going to add that extra spice to this Knicks team, that extra sazon. Because even when you look at it with Tibbs, that first season with Karl-Anthony Towns and Mikal Bridges, the team did not have the same attitude as they did when they had Hartenstein, Julius Randle, and Dante DiVincenzo.
Yeah. That's going to make you that dog that you need to be when you got to go up against those Pistons. Right. Because this is the thing about the Pistons more so than the Cavs or anybody else. B.J. Bickerstaff comes on the show, First Take, whenever, you know, when the offseason arrives and all that stuff. And he couldn't stop talking about how badly he wants the Knicks. Like, they will never beat us again, ever. And his players feel that way.
Yeah.
And then I watched the Knicks go into Detroit a few weeks ago and lose by 30.
Yep.
And I said, oh, shit. I'm really, really, really worried.
Stephen A. Smith, no need to stress out that hairline any further back. Sometimes when you get punched in the mouth, it's that wake-up call that's much needed. And again, the Knicks got the message throughout the regular season that we're on the hit list for the Pistons for sure.
Starting the dog, though, Jose, he got that kind of mentality.
Yeah, but that, he's not. That's not enough.
Alvarado.
That's not enough.
Sometimes you bring that mentality, though, just his
style. But Brunson and Mikal Bridges and OG and Anobi, they got enough of that. I'm looking at them and I'm like, I needed another dog. I needed a big boy. You know, somebody on the front line.
Yeah.
Because the combination of Durin and Stewart for Detroit.
Yeah.
They some monsters when they
came out of nowhere.
But Stephen A.
Yeah.
James Harden now makes the Cleveland Cavaliers the ultimate accident waiting to happen.
That's true. but that's for game six or seven.
It is, but it's going to happen.
The games one through five.
Uh-oh, Skip, you might be onto something because your boy Donovan Mitchell, he's starting to fall under that same category. I mean, at least James Harden got out of the first round. Ever since Spider had cooked Russell Westbrook in his rookie season, the first round is looking like where they make his bet at.
James Harden now makes the Cleveland Cavaliers the ultimate accident waiting to happen.
That's true, but that's for game 6 or 7.
It is, but it's going
to happen. The games 1 through 5, regular season, he's a totally different animal.
Okay, didn't I just recently see your Knicks win some silly, gimmicky little in-season, early-season tournament and celebrate like you'd won another championship?
Yeah, no, it was a bit hyperbolic, I'll admit it. Yeah. But damn it, you got to crawl before you walk.
Hey, you get
desperate
a trophy
times cover different measures.
You get a trophy and nobody cares.
Trophy
is it a chip? Is it a chip?
It's not a chip.
No.
It's not a chip.
But it was a
chocolate chip,
It was the preemptive. It was crawling before you walk. It was getting an indication of what we could potentially do if all the cylinders are clicking. So,
damn, you see all the energy that the Knicks stir up in the media? The fact that they really celebrated that championship no different than any other team that had won the trophy already. The media is always looking for one little inkling to troll the fucking Knicks, I'm telling you. They didn't think we was going to win with Tibbs. Then as soon as he got let go, oh, they let go of Tibbs. Why? The Knicks did not hang up the Emirates Cup banner. Then the media's like, oh, how come they didn't hang it up? If we celebrated too much, they would have criticized us. The same thing would have happened if we emphasized we were not celebrating that victory at all. They would have been like, oh, they don't respect the Emirates Cup. You can't win with these cockroaches, I'm telling you.
I got you. Listen, we ain't won since 1973.
Yeah.
You understand? That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
And, okay?
And even worse, historically, all the greatest players have gone to the Mecca of basketball, Madison
and destroyed
Square Garden, and had their greatest games against the Knicks.
Steph,
against,
LeBron,
not for
Kobe,
the Knicks,
MJ,
against the Knicks.
Totally true.
Right?
Totally. Again.
That's the greatest
the difference
thing in
between
your legacy
us
is
and
they
you
come here to
is that we
kill
know
yeah.
you don't.
Yeah.
You haven't accepted it. You right. haven't accepted that the fact that the Dallas Cowboys have aged you, not you, not your conditioning, not the way you feel, not the fact that you're in shape, but you look a bit sadder. And
come on, Skip. You already know it, Skip. Just accept it. You already know it.
Aged every time they lose. This is what happens.
That's true.
Any other time they win, you're vibrant, you're looking good,
okay.
You're full of light,
I
and then they disappoint you. So
this
I look
year
at
nearly
you,
killed me.
And I look at you, and I always say, just wait. That's what it was.
Where are you going now? Your best player's like barely 5 feet tall.
And,
am I right?
Dropping 28 a night.
Okay, but oh,
and no. Dropping 28 a night.
Did he's you, defendable. He's
no, he's not.
Yes, he
no,
is.
No, he's not.
He's too little.
He's Jalen Brunson. Listen, you just.
Hey, JB is cooking up in that paint like he's Ewing, no post up. A lot of players are getting annoyed dealing with his physicality while at the same time trying to juggle the referee's whistles from all these foul calls. It's a delicate balancing act dealing with JB.
Say that about Iverson. You just
no,
said about Iverson. Oh, wait a minute.
Wait,
now.
You think Jalen Brunson better than Iverson?
No, but
you
I
do
think,
not.
No, no.
I know you.
No, but I do look at him and I say, first of all, he's more efficient. He's a bigger body. He can take interior punishment, and he's showing you he a rough rider. He averaged 28 a night, Skip.
Yeah,
no matter who's it against.
Can be.
Damn, Stephen A. Sounds like you naming all of Trae Young's weaknesses.
He's thwarted when it matters most.
Some okay.
team can just
have
take
you seen
him away.
Evidence of that in the playoffs with the New York Knicks? I haven't. I haven't.
And you will.
Don't talk to me about Will.
Okay.
I'm talking about what happened.
Okay.
What happened?
Here's the other problem. Your second best player named Cat is more pussycat to me, right? He's pussycat.
That's very
disrespectful. Am I right?
That's very disrespectful.
Well, disagree with me. Tell me I'm wrong.
That's very disrespectful.
He's pussycat.
No, we're not going to say that.
Huh?
What we're going to say is that he's one of the elite shooting big men the game has ever seen.
Yeah, he is.
He has to shoot better than that. He's about 35% for three-point range now, but he'll be better when it counts.
He's great until it matters.
I worry about him trying to post up. I don't like it.
I worry about him getting to the free throw line a lot more. Cat doesn't have to average all-star numbers. Just get to the line and average anywhere from 8 to 13 free throws a game. I would apply the same thing to Mikal Bridges.
Okay. I want him to stay away from the basket and shoot because he's going to stay healthier that way. OG Anunoby ain't no scrub.
No, I like
that brother's a dog. Mikal Bridges is an iron man. And he wasn't worth 5 first-round picks. That's what they'd have had Giannis if they didn't do that. I'm very pissed about that. They'd have had Giannis. But that's neither here nor there. The bottom line is this. When I look at him, Josh Hart, the cardiac kid himself, with Brunson and those boys, look, the New York Knicks could still come out of the East. Mm. They could still come out. But notice how, again, I'm reasonable. You didn't hear me say they're going to beat OKC.
No.
You didn't hear that. By the way, your San Antonio Spurs have the chance because that is OKC's kryptonite. Clearly, them haven't beaten.
I understand.
And when it comes to the Knicks, Karl-Anthony Towns is OKC's kryptonite. That is going to be the mismatch that Mike Brown is going to have to find a way to exploit. They do not have the size. They sort of rely on their strength and their speed. Jokic last season almost overcame that while having no bench. It took the Thunder 7 games to defeat him.
OKC 4 or 5 times and women Giannis 7'5". Can't teach that. I got all of that. But right now, the New York Knicks should easily be seen as one of the top 4 teams in the entire NBA.
Okay, I got a prediction.
Beat everybody but OKC, in my estimation.
Your accident will happen in the second round against the Boston Celtics in Game 7 at the Garden. I'll just go on the record right now. You will lose Game 7 to the Celtics. What's left of the Celtics?
Are you ready for this?
I don't know about that, Skip. The Celtics relying on Jaylen Brown's decision-making in a 7-game series, that's a tough call. This season is really his first time being in that role. I'm not saying that the brother can't do it, but at the end of the day, that is not his calling card on that team. When Jason Tatum had went down in Game 4 in the series against the Knicks, they relied on Jaylen Brown's decision-making in Game 5, which was great, but eventually it came back around in Game 6 as the Knicks easily closed it out, and he just had a bunch of turnovers.
Yeah.
They ain't getting to a Game 7.
Okay.
The New York Knicks, without Jason Tatum having to worry about
it. Maybe he's going to come back.
He don't need to come back. That's an Achilles. That's an Achilles.
You don't want him to come back.
I don't.
He might.
But that would be, well, they were going to beat him with him anyway. He got hurt when they were down 3-1. Let's get that right, okay?
Facts, Stephen A. Preach to that Dallas Cowboy. Come on, Skip. What's that saying that he says all the time? You already know it.
But the point is this. Jason Tatum's a stud. I know that. I've already told him. Don't come back. Take his time. Come back next season. Don't even worry about the season. Jaylen Brown is that dude. Showing he's worthy number one option. $304 million. $304 million. Mm. And the brother's balling. Showing he's worthy of number one. Still ain't good enough. New York Knicks take them out in 6. Mm. New York Knicks take them out in 6 games. Okay. It ain't going 7.
Remember
so
I said
that's wrong.
Yes.
Okay. Don't worry about it. See, okay. You're going to be, you know, listen, you know how you are. Mm. The minute you're wrong, suddenly I got to reach out to Ernestine. I got to look for you. I can't find you because you ain't nowhere to be found because you know I'm going to troll you. That's what you do. I get it. That's how you are. But it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going. New York Knicks will not lose to the Boston Celtics.
I'm
going to
be knocking on your door after Game 7 loss in the mecca of basketball.
Oh, so now you predict they're going to lose at MSG.
Yeah.
He don't know what's
something wrong with him. Something wrong with him. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Skip is definitely bugging out. It wouldn't even matter if the Celtics didn't even make a trade for Vooch and just kept, Anfrey Simmons or whatever his name is, the guard that they got out in Portland. Had their team just remained the same, they wasn't going anywhere anyway. And low-key, the same thing for the Cavaliers. That's a team right now that's in an in-between stage. Evan Mobley and Darius Garland went from being all-stars to almost virtually invisible this season. No wonder they made the move for James Harden. But we'll see how it plays out. The media members have to definitely put more respect on the Knicks' name. All right, my fellow Knicks fans, this is just a quick PSA, as I will be doing a lot of hardwood nuances that's going on with the squad exclusively on Patreon or pannick.com. Each video is available for individual purchase, or you could do a monthly subscription where you get everything all at once. This allows the freedom to drop a lot of dope videos in a very unique way, as we'll do a lot of the storytelling as well as the nuances with the squad as things continue to evolve as the season progresses. So we get into the nitty-gritty with the details. This is a great way to exchange value without any of the annoying ads. And thank you for all your support. So in my previous segments, we heard Rich Paul easing up and jonesing James Dolan, Mike Brown, and talking up the New York Knicks organization to a degree, stating how the whole league is different when the Knicks are in the finals, and even going as far as to coming to the defense of James Dolan when Max Kellerman went on one of his mini rants. Matter of fact, I'll link that in the description below. But right here, Brian Windhorst once again gives great insight into how LeBron James is kind of reevaluating his options come next season. The Knicks right now are in championship contention, and who knows, for the right price, maybe LeBron James could come to New York. The way the team's salary is structured right now, maybe it might be on a minimum deal, but a championship in New York really goes far for his brand, and that's what he's really all about. Will you guys check it out? And every once in a while, I'll check in.
And I don't know if he's going to have an answer in June. I don't know where he's going to be with that. He may not know for sure until later. But he's going to have to decide that. That's going to be first. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, will he play? How much money is he willing to play for? Is he willing to play for $30 million? is he willing to play for $15 million? I mean, Dirk Nowitzki twice took really big pay cuts to stay with the Mavericks. Now, it's debatable about whether those actually helped the Mavericks or whether they just saved a bunch of money because they didn't actually get functionally better. But that's neither here nor there. It's not unprecedented for a guy at the end of a 20-year career to take a big pay cut to stay with the team. If LeBron is determined to make the most money, it will probably not be with the Lakers. But pathway two is to stay with the Lakers for less money. That, well, how much less? A lot of variables we don't know yet. Three, would he go someplace else? If he becomes a free agent, would he go someplace else?
Mm-hmm.
The real question is, will he go someplace else for less money if that team has a proper plan? Rob Pelinka this past offseason did not make any moves, and LeBron James, of course, opted back in. But had he been competent enough to present a proper plan to LeBron, I'm sure that he would have restructured his deal to make sure that the Lakers are competing on a higher level. And when the Knicks enter into the next offseason, they're going to have to look at quite a few things. The Deuce McBride contract, Jose Alvarado, Mitchell Robinson, Landry Shamet. Things are going to get quite tricky because at the same time, they're going to have an additional draft pick to send out to possibly get Giannis. So LeBron James, in the midst of all this, might be willing to take even a deeper pay cut to compete for a championship, especially in New York. That's going to be good for his brand. My only issue is that will he accept coming off the bench and possibly playing in crunch time? Him starting on this Knicks roster would not make any sense.
And would he go someplace to make the most money? Or would he go someplace where he could take less money, but that he would feel comfortable or feel like he could win? It would probably, there's a good chance it would be his last year. He certainly has to go into it with a strong possibility it would be his last year. So he has to go to a place where he could be comfortable playing a year. And I think there's a couple of places where that might make sense. Cleveland is one of them.
Heat? You want to go down the
I'm not sure I put the Heat on the list.
Okay, where else? Where else?
You know?
Hey, Rich Eisman right here is fishing for the real answer, which is New York. He knows that shit in the back of his mind. Windhorse, tell me the truth. It's New York, isn't it?
Golden State, depending on how things go, would be one of them, depending on where their team is.
Would Kerr have to be there?
Maybe. Okay. I don't. But that's a good question.
Sure. Okay.
The fact that Golden State is on the table for LeBron, New York is definitely an option. Golden State is nowhere near competing for a championship.
Okay. And there's a place or two that I won't say right now that I'm keeping my eye on.
Is that the finger thing?
I have a team or two that I think he could consider going to.
Okay.
And I have researched the concept.
Okay.
And I will continue to keep my eye on the concept.
Keep digging.
And let's just say that, you know, it's not without merit. It's just not something I'm going to say. And I don't mean to be a jerk that way.
No.
But I can't. I'm going to try to lay low this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be on every show trying to back up what I said.
You know, Brian Windhorst is very careful with his words when it comes to LeBron. They went to the same high school. So he has a major vested interest into making sure that the best basketball player of all time came from not only his hometown, but the same high school that he attended. Again, in my previous segments, we had heard Rich Paul apply a lot of pressure to Leon Rose to not stay complacent and make a bigger move as he kept going on and on about Mikal Bridges and just Josh Hart, and the Knicks should just flip a few players to get a solidified guy. All these Midwest guys, Rich Paul, Brian Windhorst, Clutch Sports, when they speak, they choose their words very carefully, and the subjects they do talk about on the open air, it is more than likely reviewed and signed off on. So we'll see if Rich Paul continues to cozy up to James Dolan, Mike Brown, and the New York Knicks. That podcast he has with Max Kellerman does serve a purpose, and it is to propagate their agendas while they're facing a lot of arrows from the LA media in LeBron's last season out there. But we'll see how it plays out. Definitely interesting times in the league. So former Knick and New York native Precious Achiuwa finally spoke his truth on how his second season with the Knicks didn't necessarily go the way he planned. He not only started off that year with an injury, but the Knicks just welcomed Mikal Bridges as well as Karl-Anthony Towns to the team, and they were still trying to figure out what kind of bench unit works with those players. Precious was able to shine in his first season when Julius Randle had went out with that shoulder injury, and within that same stretch of time, Isaiah Hartenstein was able to prove his value and get a large contract from OKC. So Tom Thibodeau doesn't necessarily play bench guys like that unless he's forced to. And we've seen it play out in last year's conference finals against the Indiana Pacers in games 3 and 4. The Knicks last season were ranked number 30th when it comes to bench minutes and points. Will you guys check out what Precious had to say? And every once in a while, I'll check in.
I don't think we had a bad bench. You could never say the bench is not good if you don't play the bench. How are you supposed to know that? Last year, it was a lot going on. You have a lot of moving parts to the team, especially coming off a season when we had a lot of success for the first time in a long time. And then you come in with a lot of moving parts. And you just gotta kind of like adjust. And then also stay professional. I started the season, I was hurt. Then I came back, got back into the lineup, and things happened along the way where I wasn't playing at all. But we were having success. So it was a lot of things that happened that I wasn't expecting. You just got to continue to be professional.
You know, when this season had first started out under Mike Brown, Josh Hart was going through a similar phase. And who knows, maybe unlike Tibbs, he made the quick adjustment, listened to some of the personnel, and ended up starting Josh Hart. That was one of the things James Dolan, in his interview, has spoke about Tibbs not being as collaborative. But when you're a journeyman like Precious Achiuwa, just getting sat down in the doghouse, every minute, week to week, is important because more than likely, you're going to have to prove your value in the offseason. All this just adds to the level of anxiety to be a journeyman.
It wasn't easy knowing things that you're able to do to contribute to a team like that, especially if you just did it the year before and fast forward a year later. You're not even given an opportunity to do that, to help get success in that type of way. I'm not going to sit here and go back and forth on what is a good bench and what is not a good bench. But you can't say something isn't working if you've never tried it. Everybody has an opinion. I'm sure they made a decision based on what that opinion is, and here we are.
Hey, it's a tough thing because Precious, he did contribute really well when Randall had went out with that injury, just to be left in the doghouse the next season, and you're coming off an injury before the season even started. You're just trying to work your way back and not even given a chance to show what you could do with this new roster. It's hard to sit well with that. It always leaves us to wonder, even if the Knicks had Isaiah Hartenstein's bird rights, if he knew that Tibbs was going to be the coach, would he actually return to the Knicks? Just knowing that it's a possibility that the minutes fluctuation might not be in his favor. That's another thing about Tibbs having this reputation of not necessarily playing the bench unit. It would make it hard for Leon Rose to further recruit better role players. And in this positionalist basketball landscape that we're all in now, certain players don't fit that archetype, so it only adds on to the stresses of just not knowing your minutes, and then if you go out there, you might be out of position. Precious Achiuwa further elaborated on these dynamics right here.
First couple years in the league in Toronto, that's how I played. Mainly playing the four position, which is my natural position. And that's how I had a lot of success my first year in New York. Just the ball is able to move around a lot better. Guys are able to play the game with a sense of freedom better. Well, for me at least, I would say a better sense of freedom, instead of just being pigeonholed. You just never know. It's just the way the business is. But yeah, it was special for me to play in New York, and I'm never going to put it out and say I'm never coming back or I don't ever want to come back. Obviously, that's home for me. A kid that grew up in the city.
The Knicks definitely have come a long way of just having a constant rotation of different players coming in and out of the lineup from season to season. We Knicks fans in the past few seasons sort of become immune, but this used to be the normal dynamic taking place with the team from season to season. You have guys frustrated with their current role and position on the team, not necessarily even certain about their future with the team, and it's a hard position to be in. It's great to see Precious out of Queens just thriving out there in Sacramento, and for sure, we all felt that there was a lot left on the table if Tibbs went to the bench more. But it is what it is. At the end of the day, everybody progressed. Precious even showed out in the matchup against the Knicks that happened down in Sacramento. But Mike Brown having that reputation as a coach that continuously gives guys opportunities coming off the bench, whether there's injuries or not, it's a good card for the Knicks to have in their back pocket going forward. Because in this NBA parity era, having deep teams is a must. So one of the best Knicks players that not only embodies the heart and soul of the franchise, but as well as the city, I did a sit down with Carmelo Anthony, aka my man John Starks, and he touched on his crazy roller coaster ride into the NBA. And this was a perfect synergy because Carmelo Anthony's show, low key within the media sphere, is something that Spike Lee has always mentioned about Brooklyn being the People's Republic. But that 7 p.m. in Brooklyn show has become the People's Republic for anything regarding the Knicks. So just dialing this back in with John Starks, keep in mind that he went through many ups and downs, not only on the amateur circuit, but as well as his journey within the NBA. He was always a moment away from being around the right kind of personnel or just coaches that would believe in him versus other people that would just completely bail on him or just overlook him. And a lot of that was self-inflicted. That fiery energy that all New Yorkers love, Starks had it within him, but it had to be honed in for the right coach. And that's where Pat Riley came in perfectly. But along the way, there were many people that believed in him. Larry Brown, who gave him the tryout in San Antonio. Matter of fact, the coach that started it all was Ken Trickey when he saw Starks performing at an intramurals. But even after he got on a junior college team, he still wasn't getting minutes like that until in garbage time, he had a mean baseline dunk over the brother of a former NBA star, Dennis Johnson Jr. He went on in 1987 to lead his junior college to the state championship game. And that's where in the following year, in 1988, he went to Oklahoma State and he caught the attention of Larry Brown in a matchup against Kansas. So he had a lot of ups and downs within the amateur circuit, and it even translated in his opportunities within the NBA. Larry Brown couldn't offer him a full guaranteed contract, so he went on and took an offer from Golden State. But then he bumped heads with Coach Don Nelson, the same way the Knicks ended up bumping heads with him later on in the mid-90s. And even after getting cut from that fiasco, John Starks in 1990 in a CBA All-Star game. That was basically the G League of that time. And the Pistons from that game was about to give him a 10-day contract. But that fiery energy that we love John Starks for, he ended up bumping into a ref. So the Pistons reneged on that 10-day deal. Again, New York City loving that fucking energy. The GM of the Knicks at the time, Al Bianchi, he saw something in him. So the Knicks called him up to the training camp right before the season. And just when you think things were about to go good, the Knicks were going to cut him. But he got hurt during the training camp. And under the NBA rules at the time, they could not cut a player had he gotten injured. And that's how he got that 1-year minimum contract. And everything pretty much from there led up to the history that we all know. So John Starks definitely sat down with Melo and touched base on a lot of his journey. And this sit down could not have happened at any other better spot than at the curated vibes of Carmelo Anthony at 7 p.m. Brooklyn, a.k.a. the People's Republic of Anything Knicks. You guys check it out, and every once in a while, I'll check in.
How we practice every single day. We was talking about this the other day. Who's tape doing shoot around?
Yeah.
Nobody tape doing shoot around. We tape, and we practice.
Yeah.
You know, especially if we coming off some losses like we had. Knicks just had.
Right.
Oh, we know. Shit, it's gonna be one of these damn practice for shoot around.
Yeah.
And you coming with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like he's building that toughness, you know, that you got to have here in New York, because this is not an easy city to play in, you know. And you watch players, they say if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. You look at Sam Donald.
Yeah, yeah. He got chewed
you
up.
You can go through so many. That look
chewed
at Daniel
here.
Jones.
Yeah.
You can go through it, bro. You know what I mean? Because it teaches you, you know, that mentality of being tough. And you're going to go through some stuff here that you probably not going to go through in other cities.
Then. Yeah.
So I tell people, I didn't play in the Bay Area. I didn't play in Chicago for a week. I played in Utah. Nothing like this city here. You know what I mean? And it gives you that mental toughness that you need in order to make it. If you saw Coach Riley in practice, he had that chaos in practice.
Yeah, he's chaotic.
Yeah, he's chaotic. Yeah.
But he's all, you know, that structure of, you know, that culture, that structure. And you ready to go.
Yeah.
It's like, how did y'all meet in the middle with that?
Yeah, so one thing about Coach Riley, he always wanted to kind of put a bubble around us in a sense. Like now you see like cameras and stuff in practice and in certain practices that you see around the league, none of that would fly with him, period. You know what I mean? He'd keep the media out. We're in here as a group, 12 guys, the coaches, and we focusing on what we have to get done. That was his mentality. You know what I mean? Block out the outside noise. You know, the best advice when I came here was from Trent Tucker. He said, John, he started to see me have a lot of success. He said, John, you're going to start to get all these, you know, people talking about you, this and that, this and that. He said, do not read the newspaper. Don't listen to talk radio, because you let all that outside stuff get inside your mind and you take it out there on the court.
Now, it's very interesting. Trent Tucker is the one that gave John Starks that advice, because when he got initially hurt and John Starks was getting more playing time and eventually going ahead of him in that depth chart, that's when a lot of the New York media started really critiquing John Starks. They didn't understand him being ahead of Trent Tucker in that depth chart. It's really the Knicks coach before Pat Riley got there, John McLloyd, who gave John Starks quality minutes. And Pat Riley, the following season in 1991, just him being there, it made sense because Pat Riley understands what it meant to be in John Starks' shoes. His journey with the Lakers, he had to be on point, in shape, and perfect in order to remain with the team. And as we all could see, he applied those same principles to the 80s Lakers throughout their championship runs, the early 90s Knicks, and the Miami Heat present day. Historically, the NBA journeymen have had a huge impact on the league, not necessarily on the court, but in NBA front offices, and even with the current day Knicks, with Rick Brunson passing along those very same principles to Jalen Brunson, and that's how we see the player that we have today.
And for my 8 years here in New York, I didn't read a newspaper. I didn't, you know, listen to talk radio either. I got that from like people talking or something like that.
Right.
Other than that, I was so focused on just like winning. And Coach Riley, everything that he set up for us as a team, as an organization, everything that we had to do was all about winning. You know, how we flew, how we ate, you know, what you're doing within your personal life, everything, you know. So he had to try to get control of all of that, because he know we had to be the most focused team out there on the court.
Yeah.
You know, because we wasn't the most talented team. Mm-hmm. You know, outside a few players that we had, we were just some rough riders.
Y'all was together, though.
We was together.
Yeah, y'all was together.
And Pat Riley, looking at the Detroit Pistons, the Bad Boy Pistons, right before he became the head coach of the Knicks, he took some more of their blueprint and applied it to the Knicks.
Together. And, you know, in order for you to win at this level, you have to be in sync with one another on and off the court.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to, you know, understand that, you know, you can do certain things on the court, then you get off the court, everybody go their own separate way.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to be able to come together, eat. You got to be able to talk about personal problems. You got to be there for your teammate. And that's just the way we are. Even to this day, you know, I have guys calling me, you know, talking about certain things and what's not, but I got to be there for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They my teammate.
That very same philosophy is something that Phil Jackson applies to any team that he's coached in the past. J.J. Redick recently talked about how he had Luka, as well as the other Laker players, share more personal stories, some of their favorite everyday things to do off the court, to kind of bring that synergy with the players a little bit closer. That's something that he has learned from Phil Jackson. You know, when it comes to Phil Jackson and Pat Riley, doesn't get talked about too much, but they were playing a lot of psychological warfare games during the Knicks and Bulls series throughout the early 90s in these press conferences. A lot of things that they would say would kind of sway the referees to kind of officiate the games in a certain way. The NBA today has moved away from coaches making statements like this. But those two understood what they were doing in the back of the minds of the referees trying to gain an edge in those series. Even though Pat Riley at the time was way more successful than Phil Jackson, I believe at the time he understood that Phil Jackson was going to be a great head coach going forward. And I'll leave a link in the description below of a segment I covered before, as Carmelo Anthony as well as Shaquille O'Neal spoke on some of these psychological games from Phil Jackson. But continuing on, John Starks touched base on perhaps one of the greatest Knicks of all time, Patrick Ewing, that relationship dynamic as they worked their way through their come up in the early 90s. Some people may view it at the time when the Knicks had traded away Mark Jackson right before the start of that 92-93 season. And they got some more forward depth with Charles Smith and also another point guard in Doc Rivers. John Starks' season right before the trade was making much more noise coming off the bench, averaging a career high at the time, almost 14 points a game. But right after that trade in the 92-93 season, he went to average 17 points a game. And of course, 93-94 is his breakout season, making the All-Star team averaging 19 points per game and almost 6 assists.
But what he gave me was a lot of confidence that he believed in me.
Yeah.
Because Patrick don't trust a lot of people.
Yeah.
And you have to earn his trust. And so when I knew that I earned his trust, it's because he asked our trainer to put my locker right next to him.
Uh-huh.
And you know how special that is as a star player, because he believes in you, he confides in you. And so we used to talk all the time during the game, what we doing, this and that. And so that's when I knew that, okay, I didn't got, you know, in his circle.
Yep.
And so, and after that, we just kind of rolled with it. You know what I mean? And so we used to, you know, do everything together, you know? And so I have a lot of respect for him. He understood that I was just all about winning. Mm-hmm. I didn't care about the awards or anything like that. Every time I stepped out on the court, it was just about purely, solely going out there, winning and playing for the fan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what my mentality was. And so he appreciated that. People don't understand the things that he had to go through in order to take that court every single night.
Yeah.
The pain that he had to deal with, you know, I don't know if I could have dealt with what he dealt with, you know, as far as with his knees and stuff. But he felt a belief that he had to be on the court as our leader every single night and mm-hmm. for the fans. And the fans should, I think now they really, truly appreciated what he brought to the table.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because even though Ewing is not in my era, I've always understood exactly who he was, because he's never really had an all-star alongside him, but yet he kept the Knicks relevant for well over a decade. And keep in mind that most players that he lost to in the playoffs, Michael Jordan and Hakeem Olajuwon, they were NBA champions. And matter of fact, speaking of Hakeem, he took him to 7 games when Hakeem was Hakeem, winning Defensive Player of the Year awards, winning MVPs and Defensive Player of the Year award back to back. My man Ewing was putting in work, and he is one of them. Make no mistake about it. Even to this day, the Knicks haven't had a player on the same caliber since. Jalen Brunson, maybe I would say 5 to 6 more seasons. If he maintains his current course, he could put Ewing up to the test, but he still has a long way to go. Now, John Starks right here is going to talk about going up against MJ in the early 90s. Me, myself, as a youngin', I remember the first time I actually saw Michael Jordan take a L is when I went in the barbershop and I seen a big-ass poster of the dunk by John Starks. I remember even trying to compute Michael Jordan possibly taking an L. That same baseline dunk is not only remembered still to this day, but it's the very same scenario that actually catapulted John Starks into the NBA or even getting a look to even enter the league. Once again, in 1986, in garbage time, he went baseline and dunked on the brother of former Celtic star, Dennis Johnson. And that's what caught the eye of Coach Ken Trickey to give John Starks a second look.
Where should I start? Probably from the first time I got a chance to play with him when I was coming up IRR. Play against him, I should say.
Yeah.
When I was coming off IR with the Knicks, and when I first got to the Knicks, and my first game off of IR was against Chicago. And my matchup, obviously, was Mike. And I always tell the story, it's like he tried to post me up, and I gave him an elbow in the back, and he looked at me, he looked down, like, before the end of the game, you're going to be calling me Mr. Jordan. Right? And so I, like, ended up having a good game. I ran. He was getting ready to walk off the court. I ran up to it. I said, "You didn't get Mr. Jordan that up, right?" So it just kind of started from there.
Yeah.
One thing about our matchups, and I tell people this, unlike me and Reggie's matchup, our matchup was more of a competitive thing.
Yeah. Yep.
Me and Reggie's more divisive.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I just, you know, I just had a hate. You know, and he had a hate for me. You know what I mean? I know this shit ain't about my sister.
I love it.
You
know, I love it. It's never going to be about your sister. It's all about we can talk like it now.
Yeah. And, but me and his was more of a competitive situation, man. And, you know, we used to go at it, you know. And I used to tell Patrick, man, don't come help. Don't come help. He said, if I don't come help, he going to score.
He's going to score.
I don't care. Let him score. Just shut everybody else down.
Yeah.
And, obviously he didn't hit me for about 55 a few times, but it's more of a competitive thing with him.
Right.
I always tell people this, he's the most balanced athlete that I ever played against. Seemed like he was always on balance.
Yeah.
And one thing you knew about him, the game is never over with. Even when you think you got the game won, it's never over with him, because he plays to the buzzer. Yep. You know what I mean? And that's something that I learned playing against him. And that was my mentality, is play to the buzzer. And he was just his will. And you could just see it in guys' faces when they played against him. You know what I mean? Because you knew he's going to do something special.
Yep.
Every single time. It's coming down the stretch of games. You rarely see him make mistakes. And that's what you appreciated from a player standpoint, is that his precision on trying to close out games was so precise.
Yeah.
You know, I look at all the old tapes that we played in the game. They beat us, and I'm watching the plays that he made. I'm like, dude, who makes those plays?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whether it's hitting shots, whether it's making the correct passes, whether it's just getting guys wide open, you know what I mean? He always made the right play, and so.
Now, I don't want to sound like I'm too ahead of schedule right here, but if you listen back, he almost sounds like he's describing Jalen Brunson in crunch time situations. Teams around the league already know that they do not want to be with the Knicks mano a mano with the shot clock winding down and Brunson having the ball in his hands. That's the reputation our guy has kind of built up in the past couple of seasons. I'm just saying, this shit has to be acknowledged.
It's funny because when I was watching when he came back in 95?
Yep.
The end of 95. And I can remember watching the game before when they was playing against the Atlanta Hawks.
Yep.
in Atlanta. And he hit the game winning shot. I'm watching the game. I'm like, then he goes down. Next game is against us. Mm-hmm. I'm like, because he was struggling up to that point. Right?
He woke up.
I'm like, he come to the garden. You know how people are when they come to the garden.
Of course.
Everybody had to put on their best.
There was still a little part of you that thought, like, when he wasn't going to play baseball, like, all right, maybe he's not like the great Mike yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe that guy's gone. But
no,
that game
no,
was,
no.
You already saw it.
I already saw it.
Hell, he'd have been a part of it. He's like, this looks very familiar.
He played in Scottie Pippen's charity game.
Yep.
And this is the first time I got a chance to play with him.
Mm-hmm.
So Scottie had put me and him on the same team.
Yep.
And Scottie kind of like stacked his team a little bit. And I remember Mike coming out of the locker room, he's looking at the team. He said, just pass me the ball. Man, he's been playing baseball.
Right.
Bro,
right.
He's been playing baseball the whole time. Man, he came out there and scored Scotty. He, like, him and Scotty was just on the island by themselves. And everybody just moved to the side. Oh, man, he scored Scotty. I think he had like 50 some points.
Sheesh.
And he walked up to Scotty and told him, don't you ever stack the team against me again.
Yeah.
And walked out the court. Oh, man.
Damn. Like,
that's what makes him Michael Jordan. Man, you know what I mean?
That's what Scottie kept talking about. Yeah.
Come on back.
That happens. Come on back, yeah.
Come on back. We all felt that
Scottie
one,
bro. Scottie Mattu, man. Yeah. That was just like, that's when I saw, like, when you see great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's the greatest
that
he ever
step
do
off a baseball field, yeah, come play, because they was having trouble selling tickets. Then I guess, you know, Scott obviously asked Michael to play.
Yeah.
And as soon as they announced he was playing, them
skyrocketed. Yeah.
All the tickets sold out within the hour. That's when you know you're around greatness, man. When you get appreciated like that and your name just like is like here.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And no matter what you do, you know, he's special in that way. Yeah, I have to say he's special in that way.
Even though y'all was like heavily competitive,
yeah,
like, there's times that you've spoken out in support of MJ.
Yeah.
Like, what made you feel like, okay, like enough is enough with whatever that was going on? Like, I got to speak up. I feel like this is my time to hold somebody down, even though I compete with them
mm-hmm.
every single night at the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
It's still humanity that's a part of this too.
Yeah.
And that's a brother of mine that I feel like I need to speak up about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, you talking about when he was going through the whole...
In Atlantic City.
Yeah, Atlantic City thing. Yeah, you know, and we just, came out. We 2-0. That was the year of the dunk, obviously. And, you know, they was getting on him about, you know, going down to Atlantic City the night before the game and what have you. And what's the name? And so when we played him in Chicago and me and him got into a little altercation out on the court. It wasn't nothing like we was going to throw hands or anything like that. And then we was pushing each other, and they end up kicking me out the game.
Yeah.
Just for, like, this. You know,
well, you knew there was a kick of Mike out
fuck
there.
Fuck you. Ah, that whole thing. Ah, John, you out.
Like,
what?
So hey, Mike, you good?
I was about to say. You know they're not kicking Mike out the game.
It's Chicago. It's not happening. Kick me out the game. So I'm back there in the locker room. I'm steaming. This and that. And the media come in, because I'd obviously know they going, what's the name? Then I just went off on them. And you know, I had to, like, say exactly what I felt that they was doing to him, which was unjust.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I was saying that this man understands out of anybody in this league how to get ready to play a basketball game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And y'all kind of overstepped their boundaries far as, you know, reporting on his personal life, which they got nothing to do with what he does on the court.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? However he gets ready off the court, that's his time away from the game, and he should deserve the respect out of everybody in this league to be able to relax the way he want to relax.
Yeah.
I said, if Chicago had a problem with it, that's the team thing.
Yeah.
That don't have anything for y'all to report on this man's personal life and what he does to get ready for a basketball game.
Right.
Because I'm pretty sure he know how to get ready for a basketball game.
Absolutely.
And I said, y'all need to keep it to the court. You know what I mean? And he appreciated that. He sent word through Patrick to apologize for whatever we was doing out there on the court.
Hey, he sent word through Patrick. That's another thing that doesn't get talked about too much. A lot of the 90s guys love to say nobody was friends. Yeah, guys were friends and hanging out during the offseason a lot. MJ, once again, he understands what kind of legendary player Patrick Ewing truly is. And the fucking media put a battery behind Jordan's back in this series for him to level up. I believe the Knicks were up 2-0. And they definitely put that spark in his back to get him on his vengeful shit.
He sent word through Patrick to apologize for whatever we was doing out there on the court. And
right.
I appreciate that coming from him, because he didn't have to do it.
Right,
you know
right,
what
right.
I mean? But I say, as much as he done for this league, he deserves that quiet time in his life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I got on the reporters about that, but they understood.
Uh-huh.
You know, one thing about reporters back then, once you approach them and you talk to them like they're a man, they understand. They get the point. So it was all cool from there.
How did that change the relationship or friendship after that moment?
I think he appreciated that, and I think our friendship grew after that.
Yeah.
It really did. You know what I mean? Because it wasn't about basketball.
Yeah.
This is about you as a human being.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? As a man. And so I think he truly, truly appreciate that. Even though once he stepped back on the court, I'm still trying to kick you.
Cool.
I know he was thinking the same thing.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
It's just the way it is. You know what I mean? But you know, even to this day, you know, we have an appreciation for
absolutely
one another. Yeah,
absolutely.
Everybody does.
I got to talk to you about the dunk. You mentioned it earlier. Legendary moment in the garden.
Go ahead.
It's a legendary moment. Do you, Mike? Do you? You say you and Mike still talk.
He always tell me I didn't dunk on him.
Mike, you was in the frame, my guy. You was in the frame. So.
Hell yeah, Mike, you was in the frame. I remember looking at that shit as a kid. I couldn't believe Michael Jordan took a L. I was like, that can't be Jordan underneath there.
That's the definition of a poster. Shouldn't have jumped. Shouldn't have stayed on the ground.
You can't say it was Horace Grant.
So, I mean, Horace Grant got the worst of it. I mean, you know, he was first, but
you can't say
it was
Horace Grant.
People, they forget Horace Grant. It's who I dunked over, Mike. I tell people.
Hey.
Oh,
damn.
Man. If you run that whole clip, it's the most funniest thing.
Yeah.
Because
that's
once,
a sick clip, too, by
yeah,
the way.
I know, right?
The whole clip.
So, what's the name? But you had to go all the way through it.
The play.
But they were sitting on the bench, right?
Yeah.
And the game wasn't over with. I think that put us up by 5, I believe, or something. And Horace Grant was, like, in shock. He just looking, like, stern. And Mike's sitting over there, you know, he's chewing his what's name. You know, he's standing over the game still in the balance. And he looked over and seen Horace Grant like in shock. He like, tapped him on the head like, he like, yeah, yeah. yeah, you're right.
What the fuck are you doing? Yeah,
exactly. You still got a chance to win this game.
What the fuck are you doing?
He's in shock, right?
Oh, he's yeah, in shock. Somebody dunk before. Yeah, exactly. It's not just the, like, yo, even as a kid, the how loud the guarding oh, got man. Off that dunk.
I think that's probably why he was in shock.
Oh, anybody would be in shock. Yeah. Anybody would be in shock. Like, I still, to this day.
Way to hold Horace down. He was in shock at the noise, not
yeah.
the dunk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Now you slap him, MJ.
You run that old clip, and I'm watching it. It's like, pop. Okay, man. No.
Oh, man.
Hey, Horace might need a new set of goggles, man, for that dunk that Starks laid down on him. Once again, I was a fucking kid just looking at that. I could not believe Michael Jordan took an L just looking at that poster. Shit, back then I would have thought it was AI. But it is what it is. John Starks, throughout his career, he's always been an inch away from just having the wrong people around, like Don Nelson, bumping heads with the Detroit Pistons, reneging on that 10-day contract. And just being around the right people to see that spark. Knicks GM Al Bianchi, Pat Riley, Larry Brown, and most importantly, the initial coach that knew that there was something there, Ken Trickey. That fiery energy that Starks has that we even see played out in the 76ers playoff series where he was just so hype, just cheering the team on. But that same energy is what really got him into the league, while at the same time, it almost ruined him, but it is definitely a New York story. That's why we love guys like Starks. He embodies not only the city, but just American culture. The media, as well as the fans, are always dragging their favorite stars through a fucking ritual of just, let's see what you can do when your back is against the wall. Salute to Starks. If it was up to any of us, we'll have his jersey hanging in the rafters as one of the ultimate definitions of what it means to have the characteristics of being a Knick. You fellas definitely hit up the links in the description below. Check out my Knick True Story playlist. And also, as the season progresses, I will be breaking down a lot of the on-court nuances, as well as hearing from some of the players. So definitely check that out on the links in the description below. And until next time, you fellas stay safe. Peace.